And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, we're being inundated by a blizzard of polls lately, and some are better than others, and some are more interesting than others, I guess. For the most part, Romney's still with a very slight lead in the national tracking polls. A lot of the swing state polls very tight, although he seems to be doing slightly better by the day. More interesting polls, one on a state, one on a demographic. And according to the Associated Press, Romney has apparently eliminated the gender gap. There are other polls out there showing that it's in double digits still, and Romney's ahead among men. And I think he's still ahead among men in this AP poll. But if he truly has essentially wiped out the gender gap, that is huge. On top of that, there's a poll out of Michigan showing that state in a dead heat at 47-47. So obviously some polls could be outliers. Others could be a sign of major changes in what's happening. But if these either of these or both are very close to being accurate, it's going to be a good stretch.
One of the things that I when people talk about the polls of an election year and low response rates and what do you think of the sampling and all sorts of things, that polls generally, they're very rarely totally off. You know, I mean, you didn't see polls saying Alan Keyes was going to beat Barack Obama in 2004. You know, they generally give you a ballpark sense of where things are going to be. And when you have polls that show no gender gap, and you see some polls that have a fairly significant gender gap of women preferring Barack Obama, but most of them are showing at the very least less of a gender gap than 2008. You can look at the broad totality of all these polls and say Romney is doing better amongst women than Republicans usually do. And he's kind of gaining momentum. And in these debates, he's gotten them to take a second look at him, and they're finding him reassuring. Now, a Republican doesn't have to win the women's vote. If he does, he's probably going to, you know, win by a landslide, because Republicans traditionally do better amongst the men vote. And almost every poll has had Romney ahead, you know, fairly significantly by men. Now, in terms of the gender split, you generally get about 51% women voting, 49% men voting. So obviously for a Republican, you can't fall too far behind amongst women voters. But that's a good one. And in terms of Michigan, there are a whole bunch of polls that have had Michigan close, but generally had Obama ahead by 2, 3, 4, or 5 points, underneath 50% in a lot of these, which is another kind of key indicator. So in this, you know, we're going to say Romney's tied in Michigan. You know, he's probably not tied. This one may be a bit of an outlier, but I think we can now say Michigan is close. And for Romney, you know, winning would pretty much, Michigan would pretty much guarantee the presidency. If he doesn't win, if he can, you know, make Obama spend money there, that's a huge, you know, success in and of itself. And it's a good, useful indicator that if Romney is close in Michigan, he's not going to be way behind in Ohio. If he's close in Michigan, he's probably not going to be way behind in Pennsylvania. He's probably not going to be way behind in Wisconsin. And all of these kind of upper Midwest states, they're all pretty close. And what's good for Romney is a whole bunch of them that are traditionally not friendly territory for Republicans, i.e. Michigan and Pennsylvania, he's doing pretty well. If things break his way, there's a great GOP turnout effort in those states. You know, we could have a very early election night. Wouldn't, you know, put either of those states in the red pile yet, but nice to see if you're the Romney campaign. And an indicator that, look, there is momentum in these polls, and almost all of them are looking, if not a little better for Romney. Certainly isn't seem to be losing ground in any of these key states.
We should point out, though, that these numbers were probably taken before the Obama shiny pamphlet came out on what he would do in a second term. So, you know,
that's a high gloss. They went with the really fancy ones. You know how they used to get on baseball cards?
Right.
Greg, you know, if you hold that one up to the sun, you can actually, you know, reflect, you know, blind someone. So it's glossy, let me tell you.
All right, on to martini number two now, Jim, and it's been documented here and elsewhere that the tone of the president's reelection campaign is a stark contrast to the tone of his 2008 campaign, where it was hope and change and transforming America, and the seas will lower and the temperature will cool and the earth will heal and all this stuff. And now we see a couple of different interviews in just the last couple of days that show the president largely, well, out of touch and perhaps a little bit desperate. First of all, there was the off-the-record, then on-the-record interview with the Des Moines Register, in which he had absolutely no problems whatsoever with wasting the first 2 years of his administration on a health care bill that nobody really wanted, and ignoring a really bad economy at the same time, although he would argue that his stimulus program was designed to deal with that. Then there's this Rolling Stone interview with, I believe, Douglas Brinkley. And on the way out, one of the people who was also with Rolling Stone said to the president, any words from my, you know, 6-year-old son who says to you, you can do it, go for it. And then the president says, well, kids have good instincts. I'm paraphrasing here. He can look at the other guy and tell that he's a BSer, and he did not abbreviate. So the guy who was going to change the tone and bring everyone together, you can see how he really acts when the chips are down.
Rolling Stone strikes me as one of the most insufferable and perhaps, you know, genuinely damaging institutions of journalism in politics today. Let me explain why I feel that. Besides, you know, I remember back in the early Bush years, they conducted a poll of their readers, and they were shocked to find that they were much more conservative and much more leaning right than they expected. I also think Rolling Stone is not actually, it's perceived as a youth magazine, but in fact, everyone who works there is well into their 40s and 50s. They're basically aging baby boomers. This is an aging baby boomer publication. And you read the political coverage in Rolling Stone, and it sounds like it really hasn't changed that much since the 1960s. It's this entirely stand up against the man, anti-establishment, you know, tone to the whole thing. Never any recognition that anybody could ever be, you know, to the right of, you know, no sane person could ever be to the right of center. And then if you're conservative, you're not merely insane. You're uncool, man. So with that in mind, I remember John Kerry in 2004 doing an interview with Rolling Stone. And there's something about Rolling Stone that brings out the you know, instinct to be rebellious and, you know, stand up to the man attitude in these Democratic politicians. Because I remember, you know, Rolling Stone asked John Kerry, they, you know, reminded him they had voted in favor of the Iraq war and kind of said, you know, why did you do that? And how can you be the anti-war candidate now? And, well, I just didn't know that he would foul it up. And he didn't use the word foul. He used another F word that most listeners can determine. So there's something about this, like, faux toughness of, look at I use bad words. Look at me. You know, that comes out in politicians when they're doing Oval Office interviews with with Rolling Stone. And I just think it comes across as crass and inauthentic on Obama's part. And I don't think it, you know, reflects particularly well on him. I also would point out that not too long ago, or at least, you know, at one point in an interview, Barack Obama said, the difference between me and a lot of other politicians is that I actually believe my own BS, and he didn't use the letters BS. So there's a difference. One guy thinks the other guy is a BSer, and he views that the reason to vote for him is because he believes his own BS. The fact that it's BS never seems to enter the conversation in the first place.
Yeah, I don't think anybody more than Barack Obama is in a glass house when it comes to that particular aspect of his political career. But I do find Rolling Stone useful for one thing. If I'm on the fence about watching a movie and I see that they like it, that's a pretty good bet that I'm not going to see it. So they do serve a purpose for me. On to martini number three now, Jim. And James O'Keefe has struck again. He, of course, of Project Veritas. Hidden cameras on everything from Acorn to NPR. And throughout this election year, he's been explaining why voter ID is a really good idea, being given access to ballots for dead people. He did never actually vote. He even got access to Eric Holder's ballot in Washington, D.C. on primary day. Now he's been doing videos in the last few weeks about Democrats willing to engage in voter fraud. And his earlier hidden video got the Obama for America field director in Houston fired for offering and actually printing out the absentee ballot form for Florida so someone could vote in two states. And now just yesterday, he released a video showing Patrick Moran, son of Virginia Congressman Jim Moran, who is the representative for one Mr. Jim Garrity, although Mr. Garrity's never actually voted for him, being more than willing to explain how to gain access to more than the one ballot you're supposed to get to. His main argument is that you could forge a utility bill, which for some reason is a way to get ballot access in Virginia. But he says, make sure you do a good job because they're going to be out cracking down this year. So if you're going to forge it, do a good job. He has now resigned or been fired or whatever. The sad news is that it's a district, unfortunately, for you and hundreds of thousands of others, Jim, where it probably won't matter.
Yeah. You know, Patrick Murray is the Republican candidate there, and we'll be polling for him, although it's very much an uphill climb. One of the things worth noting, I think it's worth looking at the totality of O'Keefe's work in this area. Because remember, he had someone in the District of Columbia go and ask for the ballot under the name Eric Holder in Washington, D.C., and nearly get it offered. To avoid committing a felony, he did not take the ballot, and he said, I'm going to go back to my car to get my ID, and he, you know, then did not return. But in other words, he made clear that you could get from these extraordinarily ill-informed, disinterested D.C. poll workers that you can ask for Eric Holder's ballot and get it, and then theoretically vote in place of Eric Holder. What's fascinating about this is that, you know, people go up to these Democrats, you know, and Democrat campaign workers, and say, hey, I want to commit voter fraud. And you could say, well, none of them say, okay, let's go commit voter fraud. But they certainly don't tell the person not to do that,
right.
Which is, I think, what's, you know, unnerving. And Jim Moran's son might have been able to hang on until he starts talking about the forged utility bill. You know, once you start giving the guy an idea, then you are no longer laughing it off or just playing along with somebody or you know. At no point does the Moran son explicitly say, yes, voter fraud is a good thing, but he sure as hell doesn't do anything to discourage it either. And in fact, gives that suggestion there. So I'm glad he resigned. I don't think it's going to make a huge difference in this race, unfortunately. But it does confirm that to the extent voter fraud is a problem, one of the reasons Republicans have these deep suspicions about this is that we're constantly getting evidence that Democrats are remarkably blasé about it. Not just blasé saying, oh, it's not a problem or, oh, it's extremely rare. But that when people come up saying they want to commit this crime, no one says, don't do that. It's illegal. You know, it's kind of baffling about this. I would just tell every Democrat for the rest of time, assume everyone you talk with is secretly a journalist working for James O'Keefe. Think of what a better world it would be, Greg, if everyone played by that rule. Yeah.
Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And don't forget to join us tomorrow on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.